Welcome to the Eco News Report, your weekly environmental news show. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. Joining me, as always, is my friend and colleague, Scott Greeson.
It's not always.
Sometimes, you're not always my friend.
You get
yeah,
no,
you and I, we can disagree at times, but we'll remain friends.
I'm not
saying
I'm not always your friend. I'm saying I'm not always here.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right. I thought that you were trying to speak about our friendship. Also, a special guest today, Colin Fisk, Executive Director of the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities.
Thanks for having me here, Tom.
And joining us by Skype is Dan Jacobson, the Statewide Director for Environment California.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. So we're going to be talking about a report that Dan's group put out called Destination Zero Carbon, Three Strategies to Transform Transportation in America. So Dan, what are the three strategies that we're talking about here and what's the problem?
Well, let me first of all just say thanks again for having me on. And it's a real pleasure to have this conversation with everyone in the room. And sorry, I couldn't join you there personally. I have to join over on Skype. The issue that we're trying to address is sort of, as the title implies, carbon and sort of the problem that we're having with climate change and the drastic impacts that we're going to see on climate change. And for years, we've known the significant impacts that climate change is going to have on our environment, on our health, on the economy, on the shape of the world, really. And it's up to us at this point to figure out how to stave off the worst impacts of climate change by really moving our economy to a zero or almost a zero carbon economy. For the past couple of years, California has been moderately successful, really actually very successful, in reducing the amount of greenhouse gas pollution or GHG pollution from electricity. We've seen a 40% reduction in there in the past 10 or 15 years. But unfortunately, we've continued to see a tick up in the GHG pollution or global warming pollution that comes from the transportation sector. And so what this report really looks at is what are ways that we can start to turn that number around and then to really radically decrease the amount of climate change or global warming pollution that we're seeing from the transportation sector. And so we really wanted to look at a couple of key things. First is, can we just electrify all of our cars and light trucks by 2030? We have the technology. There's reports coming out almost every day that says we can do it. The second is looking at the transit agencies, which are really responsible for, you know, for moving so many of us every single day, both the transit agencies in terms of the buses or the light rails, but also the school buses that move our kids to and from schools. And so can we work to really reduce the amount of pollution that comes from there by electrifying those by 2030? And then finally, really taking it out of the car and sort of electricity sector altogether, but just saying, let's just double the number of trips that people can take by walking and by biking or a scooter or any of the other cool forms of transportation that are out there, where people don't actually have to get into a car. And with just a little bit of planning and a little bit of common sense, we can do that. And all of these policies are doable. They're being done in cities and towns and counties and hamlets all over the country and all over the world. But we really need a concerted effort to do it. Let's start here in California, as the fifth largest economy in the world. Let's shift to other states. Let's get the country, let's get the other countries around to be able to do this. So that's a long-winded way of saying we got to do a lot to stave off the worst impacts of climate change.
And so your report calls transportation climate enemy number one. So here in Humboldt County, we are in the midst of doing a climate action plan, and we are done with our inventory of emissions. And transportation is 51%+. Do you remember it exactly, Colin?
I think it might be 54%.
54% of total greenhouse gas emissions in Humboldt County. Nationwide, they account for 29%. So in Humboldt County, it's obviously the majority, but transportation is the largest greenhouse gas emission category in the total economy. So what does this look like? If we were to be able to move to a clean transportation future, how does this compare to other types of emissions or other countries' emissions?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously, I'm not an expert in Humboldt County, and you guys are. It doesn't surprise me, the number that you're saying, over 50, 51, 54% of your pollution comes from the transportation sector. It's because, and again, I'm not an expert, but I've been up there to a beautiful part of the world a couple of times. You're really mostly dependent upon cars for moving people from point A to point B. And while there is a transportation system with buses, and I think there's one that's pretty good that goes to and from Humboldt State and can take people back into the community, for the most part, people are pretty dependent upon cars. But I think the good news about Humboldt and about really all places is that they can adapt their own strategy and figure out really what works for them. I don't think this is a one-size-fits-all kind of program, but I think, and part of what the report tries to show is all the different ways that people can do it and can electrify their transportation system. So you guys will have a lot more school buses up in Humboldt than we will in other places throughout the state. And is there an opportunity to electrify the school buses, tie that into hardening the electrical grid to make sure that we can use those school buses both as a source of income, but also making sure that when we have problems with the grid, that the school buses and the schools are there to be able to do that? Can we really improve the safety and quality of the bike lanes? Would be another example in Humboldt. You've probably seen places around the country or places around the world that really have very, very protected bike lanes, which allows just more and more people to get in and to use those bike lanes without feeling like a distracted driver or an inexperienced driver or a buzzed driver is going to take a slight swerve and be able to knock out people who are traveling in that bike lane. And so those are just examples. Again, I'm not an expert in sort of that part of the state and that part of the country, but to be able to think about real concrete steps that you guys can take to be able to, if people are going to stay in a car, let's keep those cars electric. Let's figure out places where it really makes the most sense to put in charging stations where, you know, maybe it's at the schools and the hospitals and the other big employment centers. Let's figure out ways to pair solar and storage and electric vehicles so that people either in their homes or in apartments or sort of multi-family unit dwellings can sort of take advantage of those programs. Let's figure out some of the micro transportation. So maybe it's not a big bus that's sort of clunking down your main street, but maybe there's smaller vans that are going off into some of the arteries around the area and picking people up and being able to deliver them. And then finally, let's figure out ways to get people out of cars altogether. Electric bicycles, electric scooters are all ways that we can cut the amount of pollution that we're generating in the first place, but be able to do it in a way that's not very difficult.
So I think that you've touched on kind of some things that Colin and I in particular feel very passionate about. So in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from our transportation sector, it's necessary to both reduce vehicle miles traveled, so get people out of their cars and get them into some other form of transportation. But then when they're still going to use a single passenger vehicle,
they should be electric.
They should be electric. So let's talk first about strategies to get people moving. Is it fair to say that if you build it, they will come when it comes to things like bike lanes and other pedestrian infrastructure?
Yeah, it's certainly fair to say that. And again, you don't need to look any further than places that are already doing this. And again, there's cities all over Europe where you know, real significant percentages, 20, 30% of their population is taking a bicycle all the time. And it just becomes so much easier to do it. And part of what our report was really criticizing, and there's a picture of it a couple of times, we still have so many, this is true in the suburbs of Sacramento where I live, where the streets don't even have sidewalks. And there's clearly no designated bike lane. And if there is, it's usually literally just some green paint on the side of a road. Now, I love that and I ride my bike all the time, but I've got two stepdaughters and while I'm always encouraging them to ride their bike, it's pretty nervous about having them ride their bike to get to school when the only thing that's protecting them is green paint on the road. And it would be much easier for them and for all their friends and for a lot of the teachers to get to school if we actually had a barrier that was protecting them. So we have a lot of things in climate change that are going to be really hard to figure out. And we're going to have to figure out, you know, really how to flip our economy over so that we're not producing any climate change pollution. This seems like low-hanging fruit to me to be able to just to build protected bike lanes that make people feel more comfortable. And the more comfortable they feel, the more that they'll use them.
And so that's kind of the carrot here, right? If we can give something to people, we can give them bike lanes, we can give them better infrastructure. There's also a stick. So can you talk a little bit about how we subsidize driving and how that can affect the economic decisions that people make concerning driving?
Yeah, I mean, for years we've been subsidizing driving and really subsidizing driving in single-use cars, whether it's, you know, the benefits that people get from their employers for quote-unquote free parking or reduced parking at a parking lot close to where they work, whether it's the constant expansion of highways that we're building that are coming out of our taxes that are being disproportionately borne by low-income communities and people who may not even take the highways as often but are still being required to pay an equal share of, whether it's the gas taxes and the inefficiencies that are built into there for years, for scores. We've been continuing to subsidize a dependence upon traveling in an incredibly unenvironmental way. I mean, you might argue it's efficient because it can get you to and from your place of work faster than taking a bus, and that may be true. But at some point, if we're really going to get over this climate issue, you know, every community has to start to act like a community. Every state really has to start to act like a community. The world's going to have to start to act like a community again. And public transportation and these other transportation items that we talk about are really going to be the solutions that we need to take. Efficiency is no longer just going to be defined in which the speed in which one person can get from one place to another in transportation, but efficiency is really going to have to be defined as what are all of the opportunities that we have to help reduce the amount of GHGs that we're producing.
So, Colin, do you want to give any local examples about things that Humboldt County is doing or can do?
Should do.
Should do to get people out of their cars?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing just to start that I want to say is that even though we are a rural area and, you know, from the perspective of some of the big metropolises of California, it seems especially so, but still the majority of our population lives in moderately dense environments in Arcata, Eureka, McKinleyville, Fortuna, and so forth, really this stretch of towns along Humboldt Bay, where there is an opportunity to have a lot more active transportation and transit. So in that sense, sometimes I call us a urban county. You know, we are quite rural, but most of the population still lives in relatively urban areas. So some of the things that are happening now is particularly the cities of Arcata and Eureka are starting to recognize that in order to both protect our wildlands that we care so much about and also, you know, increase opportunities for active transportation as well as address the housing crisis, sort of the answer to all those things is building more housing in a more mixed-use environment in the already developed areas rather than out at the edges where you're cutting down trees and having to drive your car everywhere. So I think we're sort of finally starting to see some of the local planners and cities embrace that concept. And so I think that's a really positive development. And of course, we have been working for a long time on developing what is becoming, I think, and will one day be a world-class trail system connecting those communities that I mentioned as well as some of the other farther out areas. And I think that provides sort of a skeleton, if you will, of sort of the bones of this of a system, this interregional trail network. And the work that we have to do, I think the really pressing work now is continuing to make sure that we sort of funnel future development into these denser mixed use areas, and then improving the streetscapes in those areas that we already have, because a lot of those areas have really inadequate sidewalks, really inadequate bike infrastructure. And then, of course, transit. We do have what's considered a very high-performing rural transit agency here. They carry quite a lot of people, but it still is not at the point where most people would consider it as an alternative to driving if they had the choice.
Well, let's hold off on transit because that's the next solution that this paper, Destination Zero Carbon from Environment California, recommends, is if we can't get people to drive and walk, then let's get them into the next best option, which is public transit, right? So it is a little bit more energy intensive, but the efficiencies are better for public transit.
Way better.
Way better. Instead of, you know, each person kind of pushing around a couple thousand pound thing. We can get 50 people on one thing that is more efficient. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. And Dan Jacobson from Environment California is on the line. We're talking about decarbonizing transportation. So Dan, the recommendation from the report is that we need to replace all transit and school buses with clean electric buses. What do we need to get there as a state or as a society?
Well, that's good. Let me try to say this in a couple different ways. One is that at the very end of last year, the state approved a program that will require all the transit buses in the state of California be electric by 2040. And most of the major cities in the state are already doing that so that they'll be there by 2030. So if you look at the biggest cities in the state, Los Angeles will be there by 2030, Sacramento will be there by 2030, San Francisco will be there by 2030, I think San Jose will be there by 2030. And so those cities alone make up well over 50% of all of the buses that we use here in the state of California. So now we're talking about creating an economic tipping point where, because so many cities are now going to be buying electric buses, that's going to make it easier. And actually, the city of Los Angeles has a program where, I think this is true, I have to check, so where other cities in California can sort of tie into their purchasing. So if you guys are a smaller transit agency and you're buying 10 or 15 buses, you want to get the same discount that a city the size of Los Angeles or a county the size of Los Angeles that is buying hundreds of buses is going to be able to take advantage of. And so being able to pool your purchasing like that is one example of something that you can do. But electric, certainly transit buses are here. School buses, they're here. They're operating in Northern California. They're operating in other parts of California and all over the country. Virginia just ordered 100 electric school buses. There's no reason why California shouldn't move to 100% electric school buses. The technology's there. The place where there might be a concern about using electric school buses is up in Northern California. Because of both the temperature and the hills, some of the manufacturers of the electric school buses have said that it might be a little bit more challenging. Whereas in other parts of the state, we can roll out electric school buses right now. So the first thing is, we already do have a mandate for transit buses. We should adopt that to school buses. But I think the other thing is that when you take public transit, really, we've got to rethink public transit. And again, it isn't that complicated, but public transit should be frequent. It should be clean. It should be safe. It should start early in the morning. It should run late into the night. It should have Wi-Fi. You should have one pass that you can be able to use for all the different kinds of transit agencies that you're going to be on. And yet, we really don't have any of those things in California. You know, even in Sacramento, you can wait, you know, to come from the suburbs into the city. There's only 4 buses. They run incredibly early in the morning. If you miss the last bus at 7:15, you're done. You know, and I just think there's got to be a way to reimagine and to look at what other cities are doing. Getting vans. There's so many people, and again, in Sacramento, who are coming from Elk Grove, who are driving that 15 miles, who are all going to the same building to work in the same state agency. And it just seems crazy that they take 4, 5, or 6 different individual cars to get there. And, you know, in this day of apps on our phone and sort of ways in which to be able to call anybody to do anything, this, again, seems like an incredibly solvable problem that we have here.
So, Humboldt County, we have one electric bus right now. Has anybody here ridden it?
Yep.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's pretty cool.
It's beautiful. And I've heard a rumor that we just purchased 4 more for delivery in this year. So, Colin, one thing that we've talked about is trying to get large employers to give their employees bus passes. And it sounds as if we're going to have this weird partnership between Mike Wilson, liberal from Arcata, and Rex Bone, conservative from Cutton. He's not really Eureka. Cutton. they're going to work to get bus passes for county employees. So if we can reduce the cost of taking the bus, that is one incentive to ride the bus. And there is good research, and there's research within this report. So I'll try to put a link in the show notes to this report about how the price of buses, the price of a bus ticket, affects ridership. and it is what you would expect. If it's cheaper, more people will ride it. When you raise the price, fewer people will ride the bus.
Yep.
All right. Anything else, Colin? You?
Well, I'll just repeat what Dan said. I think cost is one of the major factors, and the other one is frequency. So, and frequency is maybe even a bigger problem for us here in Humboldt just because of the, you know, the cost for running more buses. But, you know, we already are running buses at least during the main hours every half hour or so between Arcata and Eureka, which are the two main, you know, the biggest communities with the most ridership. And we need to get that up.
Yep.
Well, let me just add in also that I think there's two things. One is there's a couple of bills in the state legislature that will give high school students free access to all public transit in the state, which is what they're currently doing in the city of Sacramento and experimenting in a couple of other places. There's a bill that would give free public transit to all college students and a bill that would give free public transit to all seniors. And the question is sort of, you know, sort of what is it that creates that tipping point? You can't really make it free, right? Because the transit agency needs money to operate. Nobody's, you know, we haven't moved to a free economy yet, but there's certainly the opportunities that are out there. So we have to find ways in which to be able to fund that. But the other thing from a political perspective, it's really interesting to hear you guys say that there's someone on the left and someone on the right who's proposing either reduced or free transit for county workers. What that will immediately do, aside from reducing the pollution when more people take the bus, is it creates a constituency of people who want to see cleaner buses run more frequently, that you know, can run later into the night and can run earlier in the morning and have Wi-Fi on it and are electric. And a lot of the problems that we're running into are political problems. It's easier to expand a highway right now because you tell people you're going to reduce traffic. If we can tell people and build a political constituency of people who are taking buses, people who are taking light rails in other cities, that will get more of the attention of the local politicians. More of the money in the local, those local budgets will go toward public transit agencies that'll allow them to increase the quality and the quantity of the service. And so that example that you guys just gave is sort of a perfect one that we want to try to mirror all over the state where we can, because my argument is that by doing that, we create more political power that we need to be able to move us away from highways and toward public transit.
Absolutely. And I would say we have been working on, in addition to the county, trying to get other major employers and also some of the new, you know, multifamily housing projects to offer transit passes so that not only do you create a constituency, but you also create a consistent funding stream for the transit agency. So even if not all those folks ride, it provides the ability to offer better service, and you can, you know, sort of hopefully create an upward spiral instead of a downward spiral.
Right.
So if we can't get people to walk or bike or take a scooter, we try to get them into a bus. If they need to drive a car, because sometimes we need to drive a car, how can we get people to effectively start switching over to electric cars? What are the main barriers there?
Well, I think there's a couple things that we have to do. One is we should just be building charging stations. And whether it's a fuel cell and we need to build a couple more hydrogen fueling cell charging stations, but the majority of them are probably going to be electric. We've set a goal of building 1 million charging stations in the state of California by 2030. We think that'll get rid of sort of the chicken and egg approach of which comes first, the electric car or the charging station. The second thing that we're seeing, obviously, is more of the major automakers are betting on electric cars. So there was a big story in the LA Times, just came out a couple of days ago, that was saying GM, you know, really one of the monsters in this world, is betting and making more and more, whether it's they're going to make a Hummer, a pickup truck, and a Cadillac, are all going to be electric in the next 2.5 years. So now we're increasing it. It doesn't necessarily have to look like a Leaf or a Tesla, but we're going to be providing a greater range of electric vehicles. So no matter what kind of a driver that you are, you can hop into these things. And GM is saying that they're going to really increase the range in which these cars can go. Some cars are stuck in the 80, 90, 100. Some cars in the 150, 200. the article, at least in the New York Times, was quoting GM as saying we're going to get up to 400 miles. So that deals with some of the range anxiety. So one issue, where can I charge? Two, how do you deal with the range anxiety? And then three is the price. I mean, a new car for anyone is a significant purchase. We've already set up rebate programs in the state of California that are really designed to get people of very modest means out of a clunker and into an electric vehicle. And they can do that by taking advantage of what's called a Clean Cars for All program. And this allows people to basically sandwich their rebates. So there's the Cash for Clunkers rebate. But if you are of modest means and live in an area that's really impacted by some of the worst air pollution in the state, and if you're buying an electric car, you can get a rebate of up to $9,500. So these programs already exist. We want to accelerate those and make it so much easier for people to get cars like this. And if the people, and to get back to the point then about, well, what if, you know, do we really want more cars? No. And so the other option is if you don't want to use that money for a new car or an electric car, you can use it for public transit. And I think creating those kinds of options for people, that's going to be a big thing. One is let's build the charging stations. Two is let's get the companies to give us better range on the vehicles that we're driving. And three is let's help people with economic incentives be able to get out of clunkers and old cars that usually cost them a lot of money because they're paying a lot in gas, they're paying a lot in repairs. You know, they're late for work, they're late dropping their kids off because, you know, their car overheats the exact same place every single day when they go up the big hill, and they have to carry 2 gallons of water in the back just to fill up their leaky radiator. That's nuts, especially when we really don't have a lot of time to stave off the worst impacts of climate change. This is low-hanging fruit in the world of solving this problem. We know that this technology exists. The state knows how to issue rebates. The state knows how to build charging stations. We need to move faster on this so that we can really get into a place where we're bringing the amount of pollution that comes from transportation down quickly.
So we're just about at the end of the show, but I wanted to share what I think was the most fun fact that I got out of this report, which is this, and it concerns just how generally inefficient gasoline-powered cars are, combustion engines are. All right, so I've told this to Colin already, so he knows the answer. So I'll quiz Scott here. Scott, how much power do you think in gasoline actually makes it as a percentage, actually makes it to the wheels?
10%?
Oh, 20. And how much for an electric car?
Oh, probably something like 80.
60. All right. Well, okay. You were
a little high. Yeah.
A little high and a little low.
That's my normal condition. But,
yeah, right.
I want to offer a thought, though, because, you know, as I've been sitting here listening, I hear a lot of, we need to do this, we need to do this. And I think, like a lot of listeners, I've been sort of ticking along, well, those are a lot of expenses. You know, we need to buy more electric buses. We need to do a lot of work on our roads. We need to do things to encourage people. This all usually raises a real question of, okay, how are we going to pay for that? And I just want to note for all of us that we are facing a really serious economic problem right now, which is not just that the stock market is crashing, it's also that the bond market is way down, which means that we are back in a place where interest rates for government loans are approaching zero, which means that governments can borrow money for nothing, which means we're in a perfect position to invest in infrastructure and go ahead and do the things we need to do. And, you know, it's really important that all of us understand this so we can pressure our government to act on our behalf and do that, because we lost our nerve the last time we had a chance like this, and we're not going to get a lot more.
And can I just add, not to be too pie in the sky here, but it looks like there might be regional pilot public banks in California sometime soon, and then we could get money essentially zero interest probably also. So there may be multiple avenues.
Not for people, but for
government. For government, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, these are all great. And I will just add my last little bit then, which is, hey, there's a push to have municipal funding for renewable energy development and energy efficiency improvements, including things like chargers for EVs. So
And Tom Wheeler's been pushing it. And that's why there's a push. Yeah.
Yeah. Then, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. That's very friendly.
I'm not your friend.
I'm not your friend. But, you know, this is, we need to be action oriented. We need to be solution oriented. And so
and
I would love
to move. We need to do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that municipal bond funding is a wonderful example of something that we could do now to not have to wait for some capitalist to figure out how to make money off of the climate crisis.
You're a geek, Tom.
I know, right? All right. Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. And if people want to find out more about Environment California, where can they go?
Probably just the website is the best, environmentcalifornia.org. And check us out there. And there's lots to do. And hope to get up there and see you guys soon.
All right. Looking forward to that. Have a great one, Dan.
Thanks, okay. Dan.
See you.
We'll save some duff for you.
This has been another issue of the Eco News Report. Join us on this time and channel next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.